He did have a hose strung up through one of them fans over there.
You start working here, and we end up homeless. Do you remember this?
I do. Just like yesterday, I remember. You don't think you forget things like that, Bob.
No, I mean, hey, that'd put a spot in it. We started off at Mom's house. He ends up sleeping at the rope shop. Landlord finds out. He gets really pissed. So we got him a roommate with this dude who had a trailer. That dude was crazy as a runover dog. And then we end up sleeping at Blake's house for a couple of months. Grown people ought not live with grown people. And so now we're renting a little camper. It's not in great shape. No running water.
It's got three sides and a back, but I mean, the back ain't quite screwed together right.
Anybody listening that wants to help us out with Justin's living situation, please reach out. We are trying, okay? We're doing all we can do to help our people. That's why we're telling our story. So now we're in the camper with half a back and three sides. No running water.
No.
Living the dream. You don't stink, though.
Huh?
You don't stink. What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Art of Suffering podcast with Dalton Darnell. Today, we have a very special episode. It is the week after Black Friday. So I missed my episode posting Monday because it's Black Friday. So we've been getting wrecked in here, which is awesome. And I didn't have any podcast guests scheduled this week. If you want to be on the podcast, hit me up at Dalton@310EDU. That is my email address, and we'll jump on and shoot an episode. So this is an impromptu episode with my main man, Justin, here. Justin, how long have you worked here?
Almost 6 months.
About 6 months. Justin is a very special person to me. And we have had a lot of fun building a relationship in here, tying these ropes. And I just think, he didn't say he'd do it, but he works here, so he kind of has to. So we're going to dive right in. We're going to hear Justin's story today. We're going to talk about his life, love, the lessons he's learned from failure. So, Justin, the premise of the podcast, and he hasn't listened to an episode, so he kind of knows where we're going with this. The name of the podcast is The Art of Suffering, okay?
Right.
The idea is that I'm suffering, you're suffering, Madison is suffering, everybody in the world is suffering to some level. This is promised biblically, right?
Yes.
So the idea is to share that suffering in order to gain wisdom, because wisdom is the wise application of failure. If I share my failures with you and you share yours with me, maybe both of us will quit screwing up so much and we'll do better. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So, Justin, let's start out kind of where you're from, where you grew up, and how you got here.
Well, I'm born in Danville, Illinois. Not far from Chicago, about an hour and a half. My mom moved down here when I was two. Left my dad. Took me and my two older sisters. Moved down here. Been down here ever since.
Where's down here?
Down here in Prattville, Alabama.
Roll Tide.
Roll Tide.
So what was your childhood like? Mom and dad both at home?
Mom was mainly working at the paper mill. Wasn't really home a whole lot. My stepdad was on the road a lot. So there wasn't really much family interaction there.
Do you have any siblings?
I got two older sisters. They're all 2 years apart.
All of you are 2 years apart?
Yes, sir.
So they kind of did some of the raising there?
Yes, sir. Most definitely.
Were they good moms?
At times.
Yeah?
At times.
They made a mean macaroni and cheese?
I wouldn't say that. They'd probably be just like some Roman noodles.
Yeah. So, growing up, did you play any sports or anything?
I did. I played baseball and football.
How was that for you?
I was great. I played seven years with Marbury as a catcher and shortstop. Played running back, football. I started out on the line at first. Mm. You know, as I got older and got a little smaller, started running the ball a little bit. Went pretty good with All-Stars. Instead of going to All-Stars, I was trying to build a relationship with my dad in Illinois.
Mm-hmm. How often did you go back to see him?
Every summer.
So just once a year?
Yes.
Yeah. What was he like?
He was different. I mean, he likes races and stuff like that, man, but he was a heavy drinker. So, I mean, there wasn't really much interaction with that. I mean, he's pretty much passed out by dinner time. Mm-hmm.
And your mom knew this?
My mom?
Did she know that?
Yes. That's why she left him.
Yeah.
He moved down here.
But she was cool with you going up there?
Right.
Yeah.
It was pretty much, I mean, I'm up there to build a relationship with him, and I mean, it's on his time, so she was not going to drive 600-700 miles to come back and get me.
Mm-hmm. So from there, if we're, you know, in high school playing sports and all that, were you a good student in high school?
I ain't gonna say that, man. I mean, I did travel the roads, and I mean, I wasn't making the best grades. I mean, I was passing.
Enough to play sports?
Right.
Yeah, me too.
Didn't graduate, dropped out, started working.
Where'd you get a job?
At first, it was S&M Concrete. I was 16.
Still living at home?
Still living with my mom, and I had to drive a bike, even though my mom was going the same direction. I had to get up in the morning at 5:30, ride a bike about 3 miles up the road, just to make it to work.
Like a bicycle or a motorcycle?
A bicycle with a flashlight strapped to the...
Let's go. Let's go.
So, I mean, it started off with there working concrete, and then I've worked a good bit of places.
What was the general consensus of your mom when you were like, I'm dropping out of school?
It was my choice, pretty much. I mean,
she didn't care?
Yeah, more or less, like, if you ain't going to try at work, I mean, at school, you're going to go to work.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to have to pay rent. So, started paying rent at 15, 16. So, I mean, and rent was like $400 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean,
that was back in the day.
Back in the day. 15 years ago.
That was back in the day.
17 years ago, put it that way.
So we're 16 years old. We're working at the concrete deal. So you're laying concrete?
Yeah, pouring concrete.
Pouring concrete, excuse me. And you didn't like that very much?
Well, I mean, I liked it. And then I ended up swapping there to go cut concrete. Well, at first, I went to cutting grass at the Waters on Pike Road.
Yeah.
In Montgomery. Ran a crew out there for 3.5-4 years. And then got intertwined with cutting concrete. Started traveling a lot more, going to California, hitting the road. I mean, this is before I got kids.
Mm-hmm.
So at a young age,
mm-hmm.
hitting the road as much as I could.
Now, how old are we now cutting concrete?
20.
Okay, so 4 years later.
Yes, sir.
How's that pay?
How's it pay?
Yeah.
It was paying $2.50 an inch foot. And the inch foot is justified by the height and the width of the concrete.
Okay.
For every eighth of an inch, you go an inch and a half back.
Okay.
Making a 1-to-12 slope for an 88 compliant.
So how much you making a week as a 20-year-old?
Roughly with them, it was probably about, it started off at like 1,500 every 2 weeks.
Okay.
And then it boosted up to like 2,500 every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
The more you get, I mean, the faster you got.
So that's pretty good money for a 20-year-old.
Yes, sir. I mean, it's a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
Pushing a generator down a sidewalk, getting on your hands and knees, cutting with a demo saw.
Mm-hmm.
And
most of y'all's work was in California?
No, that's just where the franchise was, the main franchise, but traveling. But we covered everything in Alabama and Tennessee.
Okay.
All the state sidewalks, city sidewalks, mm-hmm. wherever.
Okay. So now we're 20 years old. We're still not married.
No, sir.
Still no kids.
No, I was married. I was married at 18.
Okay, so you got married somewhere in between then.
Yeah.
How'd that go?
Pretty rough. I mean, it was great for a while, but I mean.
How'd you meet her?
I went to school with her. And I met her on a lake whenever we went. I went swimming and just happened to see her again.
Mm-hmm.
And then she got pregnant.
Uh-huh.
Very shortly after. Ended up having a daughter.
So did you get married because she got pregnant?
No, we was together 4 years before we got married.
Okay. Okay, so y'all were dating the whole time you dropped out of school and all that stuff?
No. No.
Well, if you were together 4 years before you got married at 18.
Well, we never dated at all.
Oh, okay.
We just in the same class as me and everything. Like,
you were together 4 years before you had the baby?
Right.
Oh,
right.
Okay. So, now, what are her parents like?
Oh, they don't like me at all.
Well,
not towards you, just period.
They're very stern. They like to culture. They don't believe that she's capable of doing things on her own.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know, they wanted her to go to college and stuff like that, but apparently I messed that up for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they're a little bit different.
So how long were you married to her?
5 years.
5 years. And we had two babies?
Yes, sir.
Two babies for her. So walk me through kind of what brought about the end of that relationship.
Well,
where are you working while at the end of this?
I was cutting concrete.
Still cutting concrete, okay.
On the road traveling.
Okay.
So I was gone Monday through Friday, and I was home on the weekend.
That's tough.
And it was like that way until even after we divorced.
Mm-hmm. So what's the end of that look like?
What you mean?
Does she come to you and say, I'm done, or?
Yeah, well, I come home and found out that she moved back in with her mom and was living in a trailer park, which she wasn't working. She hasn't worked since she had our baby girl. So for the past 4 years after having baby girl, she didn't work at all.
Mm-hmm.
I covered all the bills. I mean, I even had to come home and clean. I mean, it was just a couch potato, really.
Yeah.
There's that. She got tired of doing it all. Well, I don't know. She didn't really want to do anything.
Mm-hmm. So she comes to you and says, I want to get a divorce, or you...
She came to me and told me she wants a divorce. She's moving back home because she don't feel like we're going anywhere. And her mom just really, like, I was fighting her mom with grandparents' rights. And I'm like, look, I mean, this is my baby. I mean, me and you didn't have kids together. So more or less, I mean, her mom talked her into just coming back home.
Mm-hmm.
So she can have more time with the kid.
Yeah. Okay, so... So we come to the end of that whole deal, and mentally, like, where are you at the end of that?
Well, I mean, it put me in a good little drinking area. I didn't cope that too well at all because I know my kids are going with her.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way for me to be able to be on the road traveling and be able to see my kids at the same time, having to fight a divorce all because somebody wants to go back home and not want to progress in life.
So we start drinking. Surely we drank before this.
Oh yeah.
But we start drinking more.
Right. Most definitely.
And how's that relationship with the mom? Is she letting you see the kids? Or?
At that point in time, no. She kept them from me for a good year. And I ended up having to get a lawyer and everything. And I had to fight for my visitation and custody. Which right now it's a joint custody. So, I mean, co-parenting is not the easiest on that part.
Mm-hmm.
There's some women that are bitter on that point. Just take it out on the kids.
Mm-hmm. Caden, what's it say in Revelation about your testimony? Look that up for me. Says something about what your testimony does. I don't know what chapter. I'm pretty sure it's in Revelation. Just Google it.
So
what I'm getting at here is what you have to imagine, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that there are millions of men and women probably that have walked a similar path to yours. And as we share our testimony and as we share what God has done in our life, it affects their life. And they can hear the story, and you have to imagine that you're talking to you 8 years ago. And you're talking to that guy. And what you can say to that guy, where you can say, hey man, that's not the cliff you want to walk off of. I promise, I've done it. I jumped off of that cliff and I hit the rocks at the bottom and I had to climb back up that sucker. And so the whole podcast premise, you got it?
So Revelation 12:11.
Okay.
Says, and they have adopted them by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, for they love not their lives even to death.
Okay. So let me see that. Maybe. So Revelation 12:11. Where is it at? And they have conquered him by the blood of the Lamb and the word of their testimony, for they love not their lives even unto death. So I'm pretty sure, I don't know who he's talking about conquering there. I can imagine it's probably Satan. But the fact is they're talking about conquering Satan with the blood of the Lamb. So we conquer Satan with the blood of the Lamb, which is Christ, and the word of their testimony. So believers going out and sharing their life experiences, is the enemy hates this.
Right.
The enemy hates it because you can step into a guy's life and imagine yourself 8 years ago, and you can say, hey man, like there's hope. Like I don't know what to do, but damn sure don't do this. You know what I mean? So okay, so we had to hire lawyers and get visitation with the kids, which now you get to see those two, correct?
That's right.
All right, so kind of walk me from there. Like, did you get off the road, or did you get a new job, or well, I mean, how are you navigating working on the road and trying to fight a custody battle?
What do you mean? Like, I mean, yeah, of course, it's going to be difficult because they're like, are you going to be home, or I mean, you don't know when where you're going to be at the next following week.
Mm-hmm. But so, you still got to eat, and you still got to pay child support.
Right.
Yeah.
So. I mean, it got a little tight, I ain't gonna lie.
Yeah.
And over time, I mean, I eventually just had to make it work and just find a second job. I mean, a normal full-time job here.
Mm-hmm. What did we start doing?
I tried factory works, man, from Adi and here in Clanton to going back cutting grass to...
Job hopping to
keep it maintained here.
Mm-hmm.
To try to accommodate the same amount of pay.
And that ain't working.
And it didn't work at all.
Yeah.
Because now you're having to pay child support and you're so used to making the more money versus less money.
Mm-hmm.
So now bills are racking up.
So explain to me, and I know this, like everybody who's listening. So me and Justin have a very interesting relationship here. Personally, out of all the relationships that I've built in my life, he is one of my favorites. Just because the growth that I've seen in this guy over the last year. Madison, would you agree?
It's
pretty exceptional. So it's pretty fun for me to kind of dive back into Justin's life, even though it's a super painful thing. I have a very clear understanding of what his story is going to be able to do for people, even though he might not yet. So, which is pretty neat. And sometimes it just takes a buddy to say, hey man, you got to share this stuff with people. So, with all that being said, it's very interesting to me how we got to this point. You know what I'm saying? And we'll get to how we got to the point we're at now throughout the story. So, with that being said, my question is what is your relationship like with women in this part of your life? So we're divorced, we're fighting for custody of our kids. What are we looking like in our dating life?
I mean, more really to get to know the person versus, I mean, trying to just have a one-night stand, I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm. No, not now.
Oh.
Back then.
Back then?
Yeah.
I mean, I was hopping.
Okay.
I was hopping.
So we're running around.
Most definitely.
We're running around. Okay. So we're running around. We're drinking a bunch. Absolutely living. We're coping with life.
Right.
We're coping with the pain of...
numbness, trying to burn it out.
So would you say that those coping mechanisms worked?
No, not at all.
Where did they lead you?
Back to square one. I mean, really? I mean, a lot of waste of money, waste of time, that you don't get neither one of them back.
Mm-hmm.
Especially time with the kids and stuff like that, man. I mean, you're not really down the best road.
Mm-hmm. So how did we end up? So we got married again.
Yes, sir.
Okay, where are we working then?
I went back to cutting concrete.
Okay, we're cutting concrete. And where did we meet her?
We met her at a factory like a month before I got back cutting concrete.
Like KMA. Like you're working with her?
I was.
Okay.
At KMA, that's how it started.
Mm-hmm.
I was working at KMA pulling hours, and they needed somebody, another employee, because I was pulling too many hours. So I didn't know I was hiring her to take my position. So she ended up taking my job because of the fact that I was trying to go back out of town.
Mm-hmm.
And me and her was supposed to be splitting hours, but she was getting my hours.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, just something with a woman working just got me going.
Mm-hmm.
Because I ain't used to having a woman at work.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was a different standpoint.
So we started dating then.
Mm-hmm.
Or sleeping together. Which one?
Dating?
Both. I mean, to call a spade a spade, Caden. So,
both. So, I mean.
Okay, so we're dating, we're sleeping together. When did we decide to get married? See, this is the question.
About?
Like, what's driving you to get married, right? So, like, if it's not a biblical reason, is it just she wants to get married or what?
Well, I mean, it was more like a both an agreeance.
Okay. Like, we want a tax break? Like, what's up?
Well, I mean, that definitely would have helped. I mean, yeah. For sure. But, no. I say we got married about a year and a half after being together.
Okay.
Did
y'all have kids at this point?
No.
Okay. So we got married before the kids.
Right.
Okay.
Then ended up having one baby girl, Amberly, and then, like, not even a year later, ended up having twin girls that's identical shortly after.
So you have identical twins?
Yes.
Okay.
So a total of three girls, well, four girls total at mm-hmm. this point, and one son.
Okay.
So that's five kids altogether.
Yep. A lot.
Enough.
Yep. You almost got a basketball team.
Nah, you just need a few like more. You can
have a baseball team. Okay, so we're married. When in this marriage did drugs enter the picture?
Well, for the first 8 months, I didn't know she was on any drugs until then when I caught her getting high. So I'd say within the first year.
Okay. So how long were y'all together before you caught her?
Eight months.
Okay. What was your reaction to this?
I did not like it because she was about to lose her. She was already going through a custody battle with her older two kids when me and her first met.
Okay.
And she lost her kids for that same reason.
Mm-hmm.
So now it was at the same standpoint of her trying to get her kids back, and I'm not at this point doing anything like that.
Mm-hmm. So you're just drinking at this point?
Well, I'm drinking and smoking weed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's something that's been going through my life for a long time.
What, drinking and smoking weed?
Right, yes.
Yeah. I would say a lot of people fall in that category.
Most definitely.
So with all that being said, so now she continues the drug use all the way through having the babies. Now, did she do drugs while she was pregnant?
No.
No. Okay, so we did quit at that point.
Yes, sir.
For that amount of time.
For that amount of time.
Hey, I'm going to tip my hat there. Some people don't do that.
Yep.
Some people don't quit while they're pregnant. So, and this is, like, everybody listening, this is leading us to where we found Justin. Basically, so this relationship comes to an end.
That's right.
How does that come about?
She wants a divorce because of the fact that I didn't want to get high anymore.
Okay.
And
what are we smoking there?
I was snorting cocaine.
Okay. So we don't want to snort cocaine anymore.
She's
not having that.
No, because of the fact that she's always been involved like that situation. And it was more or less, I mean.
What made you want to quit?
It just, I didn't want my kids to see me anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there's no reason. I wanted a better life.
So this is where, all right, so if we start talking about, and there's probably tons of stories throughout this story you've told, but there's times in your life where some people call it conviction, right? Mm-hmm. Where you start being convicted of something you've never been convicted of, where you're like, why am I doing this? John Eldridge, a guy who wrote a book called Fathered by God, he would call this God fathering you. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like this unseen presence that's just like, hey man, you can do better than this.
Yeah, enough's enough.
And it's just this weird feeling of like, I can do better than this.
That's
so
right.
So we're trying to do better, right?
Right.
Still probably not hitting the mark, but this is pissing your wife off.
Right. So I started drinking more.
Okay.
And that didn't turn too good. I mean, started trying to be abusive and...
You did or she did?
She did.
Yeah.
She did. I mean, I don't hit women. I ain't like that. I mean, I'd walk away before it ever even comes down to any kind of point like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to be confrontational like that. I mean, if we can't talk it out, then there's just going to be a long silence.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's probably lucky for her.
Yeah, most definitely. So at that point, I mean, she ended up, we're staying on her mama's land in Double Wide, next door. And so how this come about to leaving, or getting kicked out of there, was she was sending the kids next door to her mom's house while I'm at work, and she's going to work. So when I get off, I go pick the kids up and come home, and I got home, well, I got off early that day, mm-hmm. and it come to about where I can't get my kids because of the fact that they just put a no trespassing warrant on me. So then here I am trying to get my kids, and I call her up and she's like, yeah, I mean, you're not coming back over here. I'm like, well, I live next door. So, I mean, I understand me not going to your mom's house. For whatever reason, you wanting to leave me and whatever you told your mom or that situation. I mean, it's one-sided. So mm-hmm. here I am stuck at the house, can't get my kids. I call the sheriff over there and he's like, well, pretty much you can't get the kids until the mother gets home. I'm like, well, we're married. I mean, it's right next door.
Yeah.
Well, like, well, you didn't drop them off over there, so you can't do nothing about it. So I wait for her to get home. She bring the kids over there. We're trying to talk it out. She's arguing and fighting because I don't want to do any more drugs. Am I drinking?
So like, she's mad that you're drinking.
Right.
But she's doing drugs.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
your fault in this... Because that's what you, I mean, like, if we're going to have extreme ownership, right, if we're going to own the things in our life that have happened to us and look at them critically from a point of, like, learning from the failure,
right,
you have to find the failure in it. And so the drinking was a problem.
Most definitely.
Okay.
But, I mean, like I said, I mean, there's a lot of more stories in between that led me to drink heavier. Mm-hmm. I mean, throughout the relationship, I mean, there's a lot of cheating on her end going on. That led me to drink more, and I mean, it just...
Toxic.
Toxic.
Toxic's a good word. Okay.
Not faithful.
Mm-hmm.
So, it kind of led it like that. And another week went by, we're still trying to work things out, and I'm like, I mean, I'm not sure what's going on, but you call the sheriff over there and tell him that I'm getting kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, me being married to her, I'm like, well, I mean, I got 30 days. I mean, shit, I ain't got nowhere to go at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And Zeno called my mom, moved in with my mom, in which at this point, now I'm not able to see my kids anymore. Still trying to work out the situation of how I get to my older two kids from my ex-wife.
And what's her role in all this? Is she understanding or like?
No.
Just hates you?
She didn't like Samantha at all.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that how verbally abusive she is.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact, I mean, the drugs and all the other stuff.
Yeah.
Cause like I told her, I mean, we got other kids. I mean, it's not all just about this situation. I mean, I got older kids by somebody, my ex-wife. So, I mean, I'm not about to put them in a situation that's going to cause me to lose them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm trying to do better. So at this point.
And doing better for you at this point in your life is putting down the Coke and picking up the bottle.
Right.
Yeah. Which I would say.
It's a gamble.
I mean, honestly, like if we're going to put down an illegal substance for a legal substance, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I agree.
Short of driving around, you're probably not going to go to jail for drinking. You know what I mean?
Right, other than so, doing that.
Yeah.
I mean.
So the first wife is pissed. The second wife is pissed. And now we're back at home with Mom.
Right.
Which that's never a fun thing.
No, because now I'm having to, I had to lose my job that I was working at over that way because I can't get a ride in Slap Out anymore,
mm-hmm.
where I was living at.
Yeah.
So I ended up getting a job at the paper mill with VS, cutting grass.
Mm-hmm.
And still at this point, I mean, this is around like November, December.
Of last year,
since okay. the last time I've seen my three girls that are now 3 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
Twins are 2 and baby girl's 3.
Mm-hmm.
So, been about roughly a year now.
Mm-hmm.
About April comes around, after getting a job, I get told that I got to pay child support. So, I get a court date for child support.
Mm-hmm.
So up in, now I'm having to pay, I'm already paying $450 for my first two kids that I get to see anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So now I get hit with having to pay $850 on top of my $450.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, I ain't making but $16 an hour and having a van payment on top of everything trying to get around.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm having to give up at one point, either give up the vehicle. I mean, I ain't gonna give up and go to jail because I mean, I'm gonna pay my stuff.
So we're making $16 an hour. We got $1,200 in child support fees a month.
I'm still under bankruptcy.
Okay, so we went into bankruptcy. When did that happen?
That was during my second marriage. She actually went with me. Because of the fact that, I mean, the first baby mama, or the first ex-wife, ended up getting the taxes 1 year and claimed the kids, but she didn't work. So she ended up having to, a few years down the road, she ended up having to pay it back because of the fact that she fraudulently got mm-hmm. kids.
Yeah.
But it put me in the spot to where I had to file bankruptcy under Chapter 13 to get the arrears down because there's a high amount to put you or to get you locked up in Autauga County.
Okay.
So I filed bankruptcy, having to pay an extra $200 a month just to keep me out of jail on top of the child support payments.
Okay. Sheesh. Okay, so at this point, this is, and if I'm being honest, like rock bottom for me would have been like 5 years before you got to this point, I'd have been like, Lord, take me now.
Right.
But you're just surviving.
At that point.
Yeah. So we're at Mom's. What are we doing at Mom's? We're
sleeping
trying to work.
Couch.
Sleeping on the couch.
Trying to work.
Tell us about your mom a little bit. What's she like to be around?
I mean, she's got her days just like every mother. But at the same time, I mean, she ain't. I mean, she's a Christian, but she's got her abusive ways.
Okay.
Put it that way.
So we're living, we're sleeping on the couch, we're struggling, and so let's get to this part of the story. Let's get to the part of the story where you find us. How did you even find us?
Man, I was going through Facebook, and this is a day before I have to go to court for my child support. And I just happened to be scrolling on Facebook, trying to find a job that I just got fired from because I was talking on the phone going through the mill, which I know is you can't be doing that.
So you got fired from the mill because you were on the phone?
Right. Okay. Arguing with my ex-wife.
Okay.
And you can't talk on the phone and drive a company vehicle through the mill.
Okay.
So, with that being said, I'm looking for a job. And I just so happened to see y'all looking for y'all are looking for help for a rope line production.
Mm-hmm.
So I give you a call. Y'all said you had a couple of interviews to go through and try to work it in there. So I got here the next day, met Miss Madison out here. Yeah, I think I showed up like, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes early. I mean, try to do something good.
So you interviewed with Madison first.
That's right.
Okay, what was it like meeting Madison for the first time?
I mean, it was very, I mean, it was great.
She's standing right here.
I mean, it was great. I mean, it was nothing wrong with it.
She was so mean.
I mean, everybody's trying to have a very good first impression. I mean, I wasn't trying to, going through everything I'm dealing with, I mean, I had to do everything I got to do to try to get a job.
Yeah.
Like, you better be on your P's and Q's, your manners, everything. Like, I got manners.
Mm-hmm.
I agree
with that.
Try not to be out of context at all. But try to put words to show my work ethic is going to be there.
Yeah. So that went well. Then what happened? I literally don't even remember.
What?
So did you interview with me, or did we talk on the phone?
Yeah, I think.
Or was I here?
Y'all gonna call me back? Or you might. I think you came up here, and then I think y'all said y'all had like three or four more interviews to go, and y'all was gonna get back with me. So leaving here not knowing if I had the job or not.
I knew whenever you walked out that door that we were gonna hire you.
Let's see. That's great. See, I didn't know that.
We should have just said that, Madison. From now on, we should just say that.
Like,
poor guy's got to go home. Dude. That's terrible.
Like, it was like, we're not sure yet. We got a couple more people coming in. And luckily, by the grace of God, man, no one showed up. Not saying that's a bad thing, but no one didn't show up.
That was the theme there for
so
a little
like,
while.
So it's like, we got one guy came in, so I mean, I guess it's like the only resort.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
We had like eight interviews and like only two people showed
yeah.
up.
Yeah, that was that
so
was
so I guess
kind of
narrowed it down pretty quick.
Yeah.
Oh.
So I'll say out of everybody we've hired this year, you learn to tie the knot faster than everybody else. So these things are not coincidences to me. These okay. things are gifts. So, like, it took me... How long did it take me to teach Evan how to tie this thing? 3 months. 3 months before I could trust Evan to tie this knot. And he was my main guy. He could tie a Honda, but he couldn't tie the knot. And so when you came in and I taught it to you and you learned it immediately, I was like, okay, this is a gift. This is God giving me a gift. Now, I didn't know what was going to come with that gift because we have had some challenges that have come with the gift of Justin. But the fact of the matter is what I could immediately tell at this point is that what I was, and I don't mean this in a negative way, I mean this in a great way, because I said this to Madison the other day, the point of brokenness is the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So what I felt like God did is he spent 30 years of your life. Now, I know you might be hard-headed or something. It doesn't always take everybody 30 years. But 30 years of your life crushing you.
Right.
Annihilating you. And then for whatever reason, he brought you into this freaking hot, sweaty warehouse.
It was
stuck
hot.
You right there tying that knot.
Right.
And you just so happened to be really handy at tying that knot. And so, from my perspective,
okay,
right, and I was getting, like Madison can tell you, I was getting kind of frustrated because everybody that we brought in couldn't tie the knot. I was like, this is not that freaking hard, dude. Like, this is not that hard. Like, when Abby came and worked for us, she learned how to tie the knot, like, that fast.
Abby.
Like, showed her one time. Abby worked for us in Oklahoma.
Oh, okay.
So she's the one that cowboys with my dad.
I got you.
Incredible human being. Anyway, so I'm looking at you. I'm driving home looking at you. I'm like, this is a gift from God. This guy is broken, but he is in this shop for a reason. And I'll tell you this. I shared my faith with Devin and Evan. They worked here before everybody else worked here. I shared it with Zach. Everybody that worked here pretty much. It was casting pearls before swine. The Bible, it says, don't cast pearls before swine, right? Mm-hmm. But what I felt like is that God stuck you in here with us for a reason. I don't know what that reason is. We're still living it out today.
Right.
But kind of walk me through. You get the call, okay, we're getting hired. You come in and learn to tie the knot. You ain't never even seen one of these before.
No, not at all.
So what's that like?
What's that like? It was different because, you know, I mean, when I first started, I mean, of course, every job's got, I mean, it takes a little time to understand and know the amount of the whole job.
What it's going to be like.
What it's going to be like, and I mean, if you like it or if you don't like it, or just how the people work and communicate.
Yeah.
And interact. I mean, just how everything works out. So coming in, I mean, the guy that I was trying to, well, that's supposed to be training me is left-handed, and I'm right-handed. So you know how, I mean, that don't really work out too good.
Yeah.
I'm like, hey, man, where do I go wrong? He's like, yeah, I don't know. I'm like, well.
That'd be Evan.
Yeah, that didn't work out too good. So, I mean, my training level was like, okay, well, I mean, I can figure out how to coil the rope and wax the cottons and scrape. I can do all the other stuff, but I just don't know how to tie.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, if tying here is more valuable, that's where I want to be at.
Yeah.
I want to be in the most valuable position I can to be beneficial in my area, because I'm trying to get ahead.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to do better. And the only way I can is to learn the best way to be valuable.
Yeah. So, now, since then, we've added on. Was Tim working here already?
Yeah.
Tim was already here.
Tim was all the pulling.
We'll have him on the podcast. So, Tim's doing all the pulling. He don't tie knots, really. He does all the pulling. But fantastic human being. I will say that the team that God has brought us is exceptional. Everybody in their own little way is just fantastic. If you ever get a chance to come visit the rope shop, come visit Justin and Blake and Tim and Johnny and Caden and Alyssa. It's good stuff. Anyway, you're not here every day. You're like me. They might catch you. They might not. So
we'll see you tomorrow and be like next week.
With all that being said, I've.
Hey, that's right.
One thing that I've found that I've become very passionate about in my life is the adherence or the obedience to implementing. Hang on, Madison's taping. The obedience of implementing Christ into my business.
Mm-hmm.
Was that strange for you?
Not exactly. I mean, my mom always raised us, well, she tried to force that on us regardless. I mean, I do believe in God, no doubt. I mean, I've been all the struggles I've been through, there's no doubt in my mind that I couldn't do it without him.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't as pursuing him like I should, like I am now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not all the way. I mean, I ain't perfect.
It's a transformation. It takes time.
That's right. Yeah, I mean,
takes time, Justin.
That's right.
Keep going.
Your
story and with your transformation.
So, no, I mean, it wasn't really a big issue. I mean, I was excited to find out and see what. You're the first boss I ever had that's ever done something like this. And the way you operate here is phenomenal, what we got going on.
So, you start working here, and we end up homeless.
Yep.
Do you remember this?
I do. Just like yesterday, I remember. Like, you don't think you forget things like that, boss?
No, I mean, hey, that'd put a spot in you. So we end up not having anywhere to stay, and we've kind of battled through that team a little bit, which is awesome. We're not quite done with the fight yet. With that being said, we would love to have a permanent place for Justin to live. If anybody wants to donate to buying a freaking RV I can put in my yard, I would really appreciate that. We don't necessarily have the funds yet as a company, or personally I don't, but man, we've been trying. We've been grinding, trying to get Justin somewhere permanent to live. But we started off at Mom's house. We get kicked out of there for all sorts of various reasons. He ends up sleeping at the rope shop, which we rent this place. And so the landlord finds out, he gets really pissed. So we couldn't sleep here anymore. We got him a roommate with this dude who had a trailer. That dude was crazy as a runover dog. It was not a good deal. And then we end up sleeping at Blake's house for a couple of months, which is another guy that works here. that really wasn't working out. Grown people ought not live with grown people.
No.
It's just not a good thing.
I mean, especially far away from the shop.
Yeah, it's just not a good deal. And so now we're renting a little camper that's not in great shape, no running water.
No, it's got three sides and a back, but I mean, the back ain't quite screwed together right.
Three sides and half a back. Anyway, anybody listening that wants to help us out with Justin's living situation, please reach out. We are trying, okay? Me and Madison are trying. Justin's trying hard too. But like we said, you know, we're a company. We're a for-profit company. We are not a nonprofit. Like, we're just trying to survive as a company as well. And it's been a touch-and-go year for 310, as well as Justin, as well as Dalton, and as well as Madison. And we're just trying to make the numbers look green and not red. And the fact is like, we're doing all we can do to help our people. And that's why we're telling our story. So anyway, so now we're in the camper with half a back and three sides. No running water.
No.
Living the dream. You
got
don't
power.
Stink, though.
Huh?
You don't stink.
Well, that's because, I mean, I go in the house and take a shower. I mean,
okay, you're going in the landlord's house.
Now, before, I mean, I was taking a shower outside the shop.
He did have a hose strung up through one of them fans over there. I'm telling you, it's been quite...
I'd get up, get here at 6 o'clock. Well, I was already here, so, I mean, I'd get up, go get a shower before everybody got here.
He was sleeping in my office. Yeah.
So, I mean...
No heat, no air, and brutal. Anyway, it's been a long year, team. We still got podcast episodes out every week. I mean, we're being diligent and we're obeying the king, but damn it, Bobby, it's been rough. So anyways, we kind of worked through that. Now, mind you, through this process, God has been able to help Justin in more ways than one, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Some of that through me, some of that through Madison, some of that through the other people who work here. But explain that process, right? You find yourself most certainly at the end of the rope. Like, you're just like, what am I going to do?
What can I do?
Yes.
I mean, with that, he just brings me more people in my life that can help, that I'm helping, learning and teaching, and I'm learning from them as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, everybody's testimony is different. So when you're already going through a lot, and then you hire more people,
mm-hmm.
and I'm having to train them and teach them, and everybody's different, which is great. I mean, we're growing phenomenal. It's been nothing but hope from here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can see some light.
Some light at the end of the tunnel. So we had a conversation several weeks ago. Justin and Blake were in a bit of a spat, and we were having some trouble as far as everybody getting along. And what we're talking to here, Justin has lived quite the worldly life. And this was, I would say, I'm going to take a wild guess and say this was probably the most unworldly thing that everyone that was sitting in that room that day experienced. We were having some trouble, and they were fighting and arguing. And I came to work, and we all went and sat in the office in there where the ladies work, and we had a conversation.
That's right.
And the conversation was everyone understanding their true identity. So we deconstructed the lies in our life. Each person in the room did it. Each person wrote down the lies that were ruining their life, the fears that they were believing. And then we searched the king's heart for identity. And each person had a fear, each person had a lie that they believed, and then each person since this conversation has come to understand their identity and their purpose in a whole different way. And what we did is we took all these different, what is there, seven people at work here? We took these seven people, seven or eight people, we took their identities, we wrote them out on a sheet of paper, and we figured out how their identities work together as a team, me included. So I'm the relationship builder, Madison's the lover, Alyssa's a caregiver, Caden is a truth seeker, Justin is a teacher, Blake is a truth seeker, and Tim and Johnny weren't there that day. So those six identities. And we figured out how those identities work together as a team for 310, and then how those identities work together to change the kingdom of heaven. And since this conversation, I would like to for you to explain the environment that you live and work in each day.
It's amazing. Like, we all interact great. We all get along. You can definitely tell that there is God's presence here. I mean, I feel that every morning. I mean, every time I walk through the door, I mean, I do pray for everybody to have a great day. I mean, because I do open the shop every day and close the shop.
Mm-hmm. He's my guy. If you got a rope, Justin probably tied it.
Maybe.
Tell him thank you in the comments.
You're welcome. So, I mean, with that, I mean, the growth of here, being here, and from I've came a long way. And I'm continuing growing. I'm continue building my relationship with God and each one of us here.
What is understanding? So when we had the conversation about what God said you were, mm-hmm. were you surprised?
Most definitely. I mean, when you don't know, like, what's your... I guess your title is?
What you were knitted in the womb to do.
Right, it took 30 years.
I mean, which is crazy.
I mean, it's something a little different.
Well, I mean, it took me 33.
Oh, well, I mean, mine's 32 then.
Yeah, it's stupid. You know who dropped the ball there?
You?
Our daddies, dude. Come on, man. Who's supposed to teach us this stuff?
Right, well, come that on. Didn't happen.
You know? So what's that like, man? Like, you go from being an ex-drug user, a divorce twice, a dad that doesn't get to see his kids, right? A guy that can't find a job, sleeping on couches, homeless, to God's identity for you as you are a teacher.
Is it even believable? Up. It changed the game up. Like, it's like, is that possible? Like, how can you be that person with nothing? But at the same time, I mean... Even having nothing, I mean, you'd be phenomenal about what you do. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's different every day. I mean, every day.
Do
is a
you
new day.
Feel like in your current vocation, your job, you are fulfilling that purpose?
Oh, most definitely.
Why? Or how?
Well, I mean, every day. I mean, there is something. Something new that everybody wants to learn or might want to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel like my purpose here is teaching, really. I mean, if you're here, you teach. I mean, mm-hmm. Mrs. Madison teaches. I mean, everybody needs that effort of growth. Mm-hmm. And me being the only tire that knows, I mean, other than you. Mm-hmm. How to teach somebody. I mean, if you ain't here, it's kind of hard for someone to teach.
Because my experience with this specific thing, right, with the identity part of it and the application of the identity. Okay, so this is like what I was looking for and what I've told my parents, what I've told my wife, what I've told Madison for the last 365 days, is that my goal for 310 was to build a culture. A culture where people cared about people more than they cared about money or their job or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you have to care about the guy standing next to you. It's not just like, oh, the pygmies in Africa that can't eat. I'm talking about you actually giving a shit about Caden.
Right.
About his heart, who he is, what he learns, and how he can grow as a person. And whether that means you stay here for a long period of time or you leave and go somewhere else, it doesn't matter. You're on the path. So every person that walks through that door, whether they're here to buy a rope or here to pull a rope, mm-hmm. the fact of the matter is that we love on that person. When the freaking UPS lady shows up, that's kind to that lady and we're a happy spot in her day. And you can tell people to do this. And some people will do it. Or you can teach them their identity and who they are and what their purpose is in life, and then they just do it because that's who they are. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so what we've done here, what God has done here, is He took that conversation in that room And he gave everyone, you get your identity in communion with the King. He gave everyone their identity. And what that identity gives you is your purpose. And then what you do with it is you simply walk into the kingdom of heaven and you just love people with that identity. And I would say that if you compare now to 6 months ago, it's a totally different place.
It is.
It's a totally different place to work. Like, Tim is a totally different human, in my opinion. You are a totally different human. And I don't know, I don't fully understand the restorative power of God and what he can do with a guy. But what I do know is that if a guy is obedient to what God is asking him to do, and he understands his purpose and his identity in the kingdom of heaven, God will restore your life. And so I don't know how you're going to get to see your kids again. I don't.
We'll work it out.
It's the King. It's the King. The King will handle that. I don't know how we're going to get you somewhere to live, but we're going to.
Right?
At some point, it might take us 10 years, but we're going to figure it out.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
One day at a time.
I think what God is doing here with the people that he's put in our, and I tell them all the time, like I come home from the clinics and making the videos, and I tell them, the people that work here, I'm like, guys, we cannot affect the kingdom of God without you. Like, if Justin doesn't come and tie that rope right there, I can't go and love people the way that God's asking me to, because we have to tie the ropes. And God handpicked Justin, stuck him in here with us, gave him a heart of learning, and the guy has just flourished into a totally different human. And so with all that being said, what I want you to give them is the lessons learned. So if you got a snapshot of your life, you have a synopsis, right? You just go, all of these things that I've experienced. If you're talking to yourself 8 years ago, what would you say to that guy?
I should have started reading the book more, honestly. Started getting in tune with that, and I would never been in the hard spot that I put myself through. I mean, like I said, the Lord changes a lot of people. He can change anybody if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
But, you gotta play your part too.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. You gotta seek them. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will open. Ask and you shall receive. And if you seek him with all your heart, the peace of Christ will be upon you. I mean, that's a thing. It's
yes,
in
sir.
Matthew. So, like, I know, and we deal with a lot of people here, Tim included, Blake included, Caden at some point. Caden included. We will all and have been all broken at some point. And as long as you know where to go, when the wreck comes, it changes everything.
It does.
And then once you recognize why the wreck is happening, and the wreck is happening typically for most people because they believe they can do it without the King. And you can't.
No, sir.
You cannot.
I find that out the hard way.
Yeah. And so my challenge to people who lead people, if you own a business, if you have employees, if you lead a team of people, tell them these things, man. Love them in that way. Whether they want to hear it or not, you're the leader. Be the leader. Like I told everybody sitting in that office that day, I said, you don't have to agree with what I'm about to say, and you don't have to do what I'm about to say. But if you're going to work here, if you're going to follow me, you're going to listen to what I say and you're going to implement it in your life. And the reason being is because if we're going to run our companies, if we're going to run our teams, if we're going to lead our people in a way that proclaims God's glory, they have to understand their purpose, their identity in life. And if they don't, we can't do it. We can't do it.
No.
In Acts 20, Paul says, I wash my hands of your blood. I preach the gospel to its fullest. And then it's up to them to choose. And if I'm being honest, if you want to work here with us at 310, you have to choose that way. Like, that is the culture we're creating. You don't have to be perfect, do you?
No, sir.
No. You don't have to not sin. That's not what we're talking about. We're going to actively seek the King. When we have questions about life, when we make mistakes, we're going to go to God and we're going to say, Lord, what do you want me to learn and what do you want me to do? And that's what we're talking about, the culture of dependence. And so after that conversation, which nobody left, so nobody walked out, everybody sit and listened, and now it's a totally different place to work. And that's because Christ belongs in here. Christ belongs in your heart. He belongs there. And so it's awesome. I'm more proud of that than I am anything when it comes to 310. Bump all the spreadsheets, forget all the numbers, forget the new accounts. Like, I don't care about any of that stuff. What I care about is the heart of our people, the heart of our customers, the people who come to the clinics, the people who buy our ropes, the people who listen to the podcast, understanding that there is a better way and you are not enough. You'll never be enough. So, Justin, final thoughts.
Yes, sir.
What else you got for them? We've tied a bunch of ropes while we were doing
it.
I should do every podcast out here like now.
Probably. They'll probably get a lot more done. I mean, shoot.
You got any words of wisdom from the streets?
From the streets? I mean, I'd say, man, I mean, follow the Lord. I mean, he's going to lead you in the right way anyway. He's not saying he won't put you through something that you ain't quite ready and prepared for, but there is hope at the long end of it.
There is hope.
You just can't give up.
Can't give up. You only fail if you quit.
That's right.
How do we get what we want? Hard work and effort.
That's right.
All right, guys. Well, as always, this is an impromptu episode. I thought about it on the way here to come tie these Black Friday ropes. Plus, I just wanted to see Justin's face when I mic'd him up and was like, we're doing a podcast. It didn't disappoint, honestly. If you want to get in touch with Justin, you can email me at dalton@310edu.com. If you want to support the podcast, go to the artofsufferingpodcast.com. Check it out. we're going to keep after it here. Tie the rest of these Black Friday ropes. I love you guys. Thanks for listening. Never weaken.